Wake Up Zone. Welcome back. 104.5 The Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Coming up less than a month on June 15th at the Omni Hotel, the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony. It features Peyton Manning and David Cutcliffe, Charles Davis, Carol Lawson, Kippy Brown, Patrick Willis, Tennessean of the Year, Amy Adams Strunk. Hold on more. It's going to be a lot of fun. You get your table. Tables of 10. Individual tickets are also available. 615-418-9595 or get more info at 1045thezone.com. This is the Wake Up Zone. We're powered by the Tennessee Lottery, and in the house, you know, this dude, Pro Bowl tackle, excellent player for the Titans for a long time. These days works for SiriusXM. Brad Hopkins, what's going on?
Gentlemen, how are we? Yeah,
good.
Yeah. Also with Northwestern Mutual, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Got to coach our young guys up, Blaine. You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you have the emotional heartstrings tied to our spending and whatnot. You know, it's very temporary, our situation in the league, if you're actually lucky enough to get that far. So you've got to have a plan, right?
Yeah, always got to have a plan.
So I heard you guys arguing this morning already about hoops. What's going on?
Yeah. Who is the better team? The Bulls or Golden State? And if you did it by draft, by players, in what order, maybe that could help us make a decision, you know, with the Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan type Bulls and...
It's still hyperbole because there's really no true way of matching these guys up. Rules are different.
It's like we were playing them on Xbox. We don't know.
As a matter of fact, I mean, you could throw, you know, the potential for Zion Williamson, you know, what an athlete like that would look like in yesterday's game when there's more physicality.
Now you have to have
the element of shooting. Am I right? You got to have, long range game. You got to have handles. You know, your bigs nowadays just can't put your back to the rim and just kind of score that way. You got to be multidimensional, you know, on the floor, even as a big.
Super skilled. Yeah. Yeah. So you're not going to give us an answer?
No, it's almost impossible to give you an answer.
No, you got
to
give us who you think.
Well, if you think about today's standards, you know, how teams normally score, I think anyone that has a more effective perimeter shot is going to be a better team in the end. Now, defense is a part of it. You have to have a guy that can shut down people. But you also
Jordan, Pippen, and Rodman.
Yeah, you also have to be able to transition into scoring. So Jordan, obviously the most well-rounded player, I would say. You know, defense was one of his repertoire. He loved that. As far as being one of the more prolific scorers in the league, you know what I'm saying? So it's almost impossible to compare guys like that.
Yeah. So we got you on here because, you know, we were talking, I brought your name up about how we were roommates, and I don't know if you want to call it roommates, but it was, Brad says I wasn't, but I say I was, you know, he was the first rounder. I was the eighth rounder, the 214 pick. They don't even have eight rounds anymore, but they do have 214 pick, but. And so I, you know, obliged to say, since we were Midwesterners, you know, there in Houston, that, hey, man, can I, you know, stay with you? You know, he had a nice little condo, first round, and got all that big, you know.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh.
So I was just like, hey, you know, I'll give you a little fee. And he's like, oh, yeah, sure, yes, come on in. That's not how I sound.
So you had a higher pitched voice back then?
Come on in, what's going on?
Who sounds more like that, Kevin? Me or Blaine?
I'm going to go with the mayor.
So tell your version of how it all went down.
Well, first off, Blaine was hedging his bets that he wouldn't even make the team. So he didn't want to commit to a rent. That's what he didn't want to do.
I'm not going to sign a lease because I don't know how long I'm going to be here.
And I understood the situation, but I thought Blaine was a lot better player than he was giving himself credit for.
You kept saying that, too,
I knew he'd be around a long time. And guess what? He was. He just stayed with me. Sure, he was my roommate because at the time, when you look at the rookies going to minicamp, you need some sort of familiarity, right?
Yeah.
Well, Blaine and I kind of knew each other, whether it was through the recruiting process or just, you know, pre-draft stuff Right, exactly. So here's someone that I grew to trust, understand that, you know, he's a relatively clean guy. And I didn't know he was an extremely clean guy.
Mm-hmm.
Blaine is very neat.
Yeah.
You know, so, and of course, he helped me out with some of the own domestic capacities that I had, like, you know, taking care of Tasha, my puppy.
that puppy thing was huge.
Anyway, so Blaine and I, we bonded our first few years in the league just because we were coming into this process together and we were still learning. And he ultimately parlayed, you know, his opportunity into a terrific, you know, all pro career. So what can be said about Blaine Bishop and the phenomenal job that he did?
Yeah.
Well, we got to clear some stuff up about the dog situation, though, because that's what we talked about the other day.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, go ahead and tell the version there.
Tasha was a Rottweiler. You know. She wasn't a pit bull.
I told you, I just stayed as far away as I could after I started walking it. Every time after I slipped on his pee and I came in the house, it just growled at me.
Yeah. Well, she was still learning her, you know, new environment. We just moved down because I had Tasha since I was in college.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, she made the trek with me down to Houston once we got drafted. And, you know, Blaine wasn't scared of dogs. He was a little apprehensive. Let's just say that. He was apprehensive about dogs. And Tasha knew that, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
She knew that he was a little apprehensive. So she tried to test him every now and then, you know. Yeah. What's up, big boy? What you doing? So he Blaine would respond every now and then, but for the most part, he had a pretty good relationship with her, and Tasha grew to trust him and love him. So I don't know what he was talking about on here, but Tasha loved you, Blaine.
No, I know, but when
she
I
only wanted to bite you one time, it's okay.
He didn't come in and I'm like, hey, man, that dog bite me, man.
She started losing her vision. She started losing her vision, so she wasn't sure who Blaine was, if he was an intruder, if he was this guy that was living with me at the time. So she figured it out, though.
All right. But I have, go ahead. You got something to say?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted you to tell the story of the time that you took me around. You know, I'd never been in a ZX. And B-Hop said, oh, man, yeah, you could drive one of, you know, his multiple cars that he had at the time. And so we go around for a ride. And I know you remember this. And I almost pooped in my pants. So take us through the story here.
I just like fast cars. And, you know, I like test Blaine's metal.
Yeah, and I had no idea that this was happening at the time.
But Blaine's not scared of speed. Blaine is scared of speed when somebody else is in control of that speed. There's a difference, though. Seriously,
though. That was it.
How comfortable do you feel doing 100 miles an hour when you're behind the steering wheel versus when you're in a passenger seat?
Fair point.
We were only going 100.
Exactly.
100.
That's why I don't like auto. That's why I don't buy into this automatic car thing, because I would be terrified every time you get to. Yeah.
Let's go there for a second.
I'm not buying it. Think
of how safer a computer actually would, you know, be on the freeways, especially when they equip the roads with the same kind of technology that they do with the vehicles.
You know, you would hope that. That's
what I heard that they're supposed to do as far as creating this industry that's supposed to supplant the fossil fuel industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when you look at us turning to things that are more earth safe, how does that sound? What's the word? You know,
environmentally safe. More
there
green.
Yeah. But I think in essence, when you take out the human element of it, the distractions that go on with the vehicles, why not make cars autonomous so you can do what? Paint your nails, eat your breakfast, make your last minute phone calls, texts and whatnot, which you're trying to do anyway while you're driving. Mm-hmm. So let the computer, let the car, let the vehicles do it themselves. As a matter of fact, I think that with the trust that an autonomous system would do, it would almost prove to be safer on the roadways, and you can increase the speed. This is totally like iRobot, where you're starting to see the distractions that we, the human error that we always contribute to the freeways and the deaths that happen on the freeways. Mm. If you take us out of it, the distractions that we normally, you know, are doing in the morning, because I commute in just like you guys do, and see the same things every single morning. Well, guess what? If there's a computer that's keeping pace with the car in front of it, that's changing lanes, you know, not erratically, but, you know, coordinatedly, and doing some of the things that you know that you can take some of the distraction out of what we do on a normal basis. If you reduce the deaths on the freeways by at least making the vehicles safe themselves to drive themselves wherever they need to go, I think everyone will be on board.
Well, I'm just happy to still be here, though. That's my whole point about the 300ZX.
Yeah.
Because I did not think I was going to be here. I was holding on to the door, and I was real scared. Where is he at right now, fellas?
Yeah. He's right there. He was safe. Yeah, no. He was safe.
All's well that ends well.
Exactly.
I had no idea. I got in that car to go over 100, not 100, over more like, let's say, 140.
Yeah, well, let me do my 140.
Yeah, I remember. I'll never forget, I feared for myself.
The interstates around Houston or...
Brother, you know how the interstates are. It's 8 lanes on either side,
man.
Yeah,
it's flat as a pancake out there.
Listen, I was doing 90. I was doing 90 on the freeway coming back, you know, going home, and a cop passed me.
Yeah.
So that shows you right there. They look at the flow of traffic than, you know, than any individual speed. Now, if you're, you know, obviously accelerating way past what the normal cars around you are doing, you're going to get a ticket. But for the most part, when you see 55, 65 miles an hour as the speed limit, and most of the cars are doing 70, 75, you're not going to get pulled over for that because everybody's doing 75.
I did a basketball game in Beaumont at Lamar one time.
Oh, my God.
And we were driving from Houston to Beaumont. Was it I-10 or whatever it is?
I-10. Yeah.
It was like being on the Autobahn. I was in shock because, I mean, we were doing about 75, 80. There are cars blowing past you, just both sides. Yep. Wow.
Same thing going down through like Valdosta and all that going down to Florida. Yeah. You hit 75 south, buddy. It picks up tremendously. I just like going fast. That's all. I just like getting from A to B. That's it.
Exactly. More with Brad Hopkins in just a moment.
Make sure I get there to B.
Right.
We'll get to B.
We'll be back quickly with more of our interview with Brad. Our show is powered by the Tennessee Lottery. This is the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. The Wake Up Zone, 9:34 on 104.5 The Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Looking for a way to put a little play in your day? Play Lotto America is a $1 game with jackpots that are rich enough to make you rich enough. They have drawings every Wednesday and Saturday. That's tomorrow. Make sure you go by any Tennessee Lottery retailer and play today. Got Brad Hopkins in the studio with us. Always great to see B-Hop, former Pro Bowl tackle for the Titans, and you can hear him on Sirius XM these days. What'd you think of the draft and kind of overall for the Titans of how they did?
I thought that Jeffrey Simmons was a good pick. You know, obviously the baggage that came along with him made him fall further than, you know, if you just went by his talents, would have projected him. But I thought the way Amy addressed the whole situation of him, you know, being a part of this team with those issues in tow, how he's basically kind of, you know, flipped the script and become a better person since that moment, allegedly. I think it was smart because I think the Titans obviously need to have the ability to get in the backfield, be disruptive. You've got Nick Foles, you've got Andrew Luck, you've got Deshaun Watson, a lot of talented quarterbacks in our division. And we know it takes winning the division to get into the playoffs. So how do you become competitive? By speeding up the clock of quarterbacks, by getting turnovers, putting the ball back in the hand of Marcus Mariota. So I think when you look at how they've addressed, you know, the secondary with what, third and fourth round picks, a couple of linebackers here and there, guys that will be impactful immediately. I thought they did a good job of addressing it. Yeah, you also got a third round guard, you know what I mean, to add some depth to the interior. I honestly thought that maybe being an interior pick was going to be a more of an emphasis higher in the draft for them. Maybe taking a lineman early in the second round. Or something like that, just because, you know, there has been relatively instability when you talk about, you know, guard to guard. Both the bookends seem to be okay, still need to improve their play consistently. But for the most part, I think that they've addressed the trench work needs anyway.
You compare, okay, a guard who played at Charlotte, and you compare those, you know, against somebody who played in a power conference, you know, like you did. How do you know for sure that that guy, you know, can do it at this level when he's played at a sort of a different level competition than maybe somebody else you might get out of one of those other conferences?
Think of the level of commitment, Kev, they gave to a guy that didn't even play in the Power Five. How talented must you be to be taken that high in the draft out of Charlotte? You weren't playing against Clemson, Bama, Michigan, Florida, Oklahoma. I don't even know what conference Charlotte's in.
Conference USA, yeah.
Okay, CUSA.
Well, they got
cool
to play a couple teams that were high Power Five conference, and he got to play in the Senior Bowl. And you know much about the Senior Bowl as we
do. That's the difference right there. When you can see these kids matched up against kids that are coming from those Power Five programs, and they can hold their own. Now you know it's not such a, you know, an uneducated guess that this guy can compete. So I love the fact that they would actually commit to a player that comes from a relatively obscure school. I say obscure because, you know, we're in the middle of SEC country. Mm-hmm. Big Ten's still the best conference, but we're still in the middle of SEC country. Put that in the bank. But either way, I think when you can find talented players like that and use that high a pick, because the third round pick is not someone you just waste a pick on. You know what I mean? That's someone that will see the field eventually and hopefully be a catalyst. Exactly. Yeah. So I think that them making that commitment to him, to develop him, to let him learn alongside of, you know, Ben and some other, you know, more proven veterans, then he'll be able to be the successor for those guys in the middle.
What do you think about Marcus Mariota and his development?
That's a good question. I mean, and
his contract year.
It's, you know, I will say that he has improved his skill set, but one thing that has slowed him down is his vulnerability or susceptibility to injuries. Mm-hmm. Same kind of scenario happened with Jake Locker. I thought Jake Locker was a tremendous athlete, was developing a good passing ability, but he just couldn't stay healthy, stay on the field. And when you have to make a contingency plan because your starter's not going to be in there, that puts everybody behind the eight ball. So all Marcus has to do really to continue, in my opinion, an upward trajectory of development is to stay on the football field. And how do you do that? Keep him out of dangerous situations like third and long where he's going to have to hold onto the ball and get hit. He shouldn't have to near scramble as much because he understands more of the offense, the nuances, the minutiae, and can get the ball out of his hands. And, of course, he needs the right kind of protection, fellas. He's got to have the big boys up front, the bodyguards, if you will, to keep him upright and have the ability to find the right receiver. And if you've got guys around him, you know, that can complement him with athleticism, with the ability to, you know, threaten the defense, you know, Blaine, what it's like to know a guy that's out there on the X that could run by you. You know, that's somewhat of an emphasis for defense coordinators. And if you give Marcus those kind of options, then it allows everything else to open up underneath, I think.
What do you think about, maybe this is reading too much into it, but I look at a guy, you draft Simmons who, look, he's got top five talent. If you take away the baggage,
sure.
But he's also got an ACL, and you got to see when he comes back from that. But he's probably not going to be able to help you this year. Even if he comes back, he's only coming back for four games. And what's he going to be in those four games? This is a project. This is for the future. Doesn't that kind of say that somebody in the Titans organization pretty high up that makes decisions doesn't think they're that close this year? Because they're basically punting on their first round draft pick for 1 year in Mariota's contract year.
But they're not building, I think, this team around the draft immediately. I think that when you look at even an 11-year guy like Cameron Wake, you know, what was he, undrafted college free agent, basically? that made a career from himself in double digit years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? But either way, I think that when you have him instead right now of a Jeffrey Simmons, who you know is going to see the field eventually, you know, those are the good stopgaps. Those are the kind of guys that you could, those are the Chris Chandlers, if you will. Remember Chris Chandler? Chris Chandler was basically brought here to do what? Keep a seat warm while they developed Steve McNair. Now, Steve wasn't ready for a couple of years to see the field, but in essence, Chris did a tremendous job, ultimately left us and went into Atlanta and went to the Super Bowl. So it just shows you what kind of quality free agents, you know, that the Titans were looking at and that they're signing nowadays. Guys that may not have been the starter, the Delanie Walkers, if you will. Delanie had to find a home off of underneath Vernon Davis, right? And came here and became a catalyst for this offense. So I think that when you look at how Vrabel and Amy and John look at some of the free agents that come into this organization, you know, maybe with something to prove, maybe with a lot left in the tank than their previous stop would actually indicate. You know, those are the kind of guys that can bring value to your team while you're letting your puppy dogs develop.
Mm. Well, I'm with Jason on this one, though. I thought it was a huge risk in the first round, in with the ACL, even though they can fix ACLs and you come back. But for this season, and then if you have a guy on your team who Klein came back and didn't play up to par before with the ACL, and then now it takes another year. Now it's his contract year. Man, it seems like that was a little bit of a reach and a risk. I grant it, if he turns out great and he is what they think he is, next year he will be. But we all know that first year, even if he gets out there in week, let's say 6 or 8, he's not going to be the player that we think he's going to be until that next year. We all know it still takes another year with that ACL, especially when we're talking about a big man in the trenches.
How many people passed on Jalen Smith from the Cowboys?
That's a good point.
How many wished that they wouldn't have because of what actually came out of that whole deal?
Well, or do you have the time and the patience to wait 2 years, though?
Well, tell Jarrell that you need to pick it up. Tell all the guys that are in those positions right now of starting, hey, look, you know, we need you. Pick it up.
But
that's my point. It just seems like you're playing the waiting game, though.
Yeah, I get it.
That's my argument.
I get it. But let me ask you this, though. How instant ready-made do these young guys need to be? I understand through certain picks in the draft, you know, Kyler Murray is going to see the field immediately. Why? Because they don't have anything on the roster otherwise. Baker Mayfield didn't see the field first because obviously Hugh thought that Tyrod Taylor was a better option for him, so it didn't force him up into the middle, you know, even as a first pick. But wherever you slide it on the draft board really kind of is an indicator on how fast you should see the field. Now, here's a guy that had top five projections like you talked about, but wasn't taken in the top five. But still, that pick and his ability, if he's healthy, would warrant that, in my opinion. So it is a waiting game in essence, but I think that if you wait it out and it pays off, it's just one of them long-term stocks, man, that's going to end up paying off big dividends in the end. Mm.
If he stays healthy, comes back to be the guy that we thought he could.
Watch.
Mm-hmm. Brett Hopkins,
I want to win now.
Yeah, I want to win now, too. 9:42 the time on 104.5 The Zone. So big news, by the way, out of basketball involving a Tennessee grade. We'll explain that when we come back. More Wake Up Zone. Powered by the Tennessee Lottery coming up now. Oh.
Guys,
we're good.
But I already have to watch football on Sundays. I don't need to see any more of that.
It's been fun.
Made me want to cry.
You did a good job.
She's not going away, man. They've been here for a month.
I don't want to see any more of that, Kevin.
Right. I'm hanging out with football guys. 9:47 on 104.5 The Zone, the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Thrilled to have Brad Hopkins with us this hour. Having a good time, Brad. You can hear him on Sirius XM, of course, all-pro tackle with the Tennessee Titans back in the day.
So one of my good friends and somebody I co-host with nationally is Jeff Schwartz, who played on the offensive line for 8 years. His brother Mitchell might be the best at his position in the NFL.
One of my co-hosts,
right?
I'm serious.
Now, yeah, absolutely love this guy. And so I always try to pick his brain about the offensive line. And I always say, man, you can just go and look at these Power 5 teams, and you can look at a guy like Nate Davis, and you just see the difference in size or whatever like that. And he's like, it's not the size, Jason. It is the footwork. That's the difference between an elite offensive lineman and a good one, that it doesn't matter necessarily how big you are. It matters how well you move laterally and things to that nature. And then he discusses with me the language of the offensive line, and he tries to explain it to me. And I asked him, I said, give me the dummies version of this. And I still didn't understand it. Like, try to just break down. It's almost like you guys speak a foreign language, and that's why it's such a unified position on the field. You guys are basically a family, and no one else even understands much of what you do.
Yes. A lot of our communication is nonverbal because we don't want to give away any kind of tips to the defense because they're listening, they're watching everything we do. They're looking at our stances. Mm-hmm. They're looking at our spacing. They're looking at what we're looking at. They're listening to our line calls. So a center will usually walk up. He'll give us the mic and tell us, you know, we got the four down in the mic, you know, so the guy in the middle plus the four down lineman. wherever they are on the football field. We'll also tell the backs, maybe tight ends, we got this guy, you guys have that guy. So there's a lot of communication going on, and you have to understand the little nuances about, you know, playing in the trenches. It can be difficult. Technique is the only thing that's consistent, you know, because regardless of what the situation is, if you know what you're doing in that situation via the technique, you'll be okay. But if you're out there, you know, kind of like, you know, winging it, you're going to get yourself in trouble, because we have to be coordinated. We almost have to be, in essence, like synchronized swimmers, because sometimes that space can create cavities that defenses take advantage of. And then bam, next thing you know, running backs, quarterbacks, everybody gets hit. The play gets blown up. But when we're on the same page, you know, I think that when you look at Mike Munchak as a technician of the offensive line versus Bruce Matthews, who, crazy legs, he can get it done any old kind of way. There are, in essence, those exceptional talents like Bruce that can play 19 years without being technically sound. But for the most part, most of us needed to follow the rules that Mike Munchak was teaching us, you know, about, you know, playing together, knowing the snap count, you know, not giving any kind of indicators away by having too much pressure in your hand or too little pressure on your hand. And it is hard nowadays. When you look at what Bill Polian said about the alliance and why it collapsed, couldn't keep quarterbacks safe, because developing offensive linemen is the hardest part of the game of football. Mm. It's a level of physicality that you can't anticipate, you know what I mean, when you get there until you get hit in the mouth. You know what I'm saying? And these are grown men that have been playing for years, and their design is to, you know, basically disrupt you. So it's hard to, you know, to bring guys up to speed in almost the speed and fashion that it would take for them to be consistent and effective.
How much do college linemen not know when they leave school in terms of that process and that sort of purgatory between college and pro?
Yeah, because you do a little training too, right, as well for all and for the draft.
I'm glad you brought that up, Blaine, because nowadays the smart scouts look at the easily transitional players, ones that run similar systems. Like for me, I ran a pro-style system in college and got drafted to the dang run and shoot. I had no idea what the run is. I never heard of a run or a shoot. You know, so
now you're doing
both. It made my transition difficult. You know what I mean? So let's just say I get to a system that I'm familiar with. The terminology sounds the same. Maybe I got to flip a word here and there, you know, to make it, you know, understanding in my mind. But for the most part, we're doing some of the same things. Nowadays, it's almost smart for recruiters, for scouts, to find those guys that make that fit easy. You know what I'm saying? Oh, this is a guy that understands our terminology. Maybe his college coach is now in the pros, and we can see him making a good connection, and we'll go that route versus, you know, someone that's completely oblivious to what style that you're running, because that makes his learning curve that much harder.
And then what do you know, you're trying to train guys and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I heard you during the break say guys don't even know what a 3-point stance is anymore. How much has football changed just in terms of what's expected on the college level compared to the pro level? I mean, it's become such a passing league. And the expectations maybe for linemen have shifted in some respects.
In high school, you don't see programs featuring guys handing the ball off. Usually there's a difference in that athleticism, and that guy, the best athlete, has the ball in his hands.
He's usually a quarterback, too.
Exactly. So what happens is, when you're looking at 4 and 5 stars, first off, they're not going to a place that they can't play immediately. So if they're playing immediately, it's usually because their skill set is, you know, conducive for whatever system that they're starting to get drafted to, right? And that's what means the offensive linemen have to do the same thing. They have to get up to speed with these same kind of guys that have to develop immediately. And that's what makes it hard, because you can't. It's almost impossible. The only thing that makes offensive linemen better is what? Repetition. You know, they say 10,000 hours and you've mastered something, right? The more that you can get on the field, the more that you can play with the guys that are alongside you on either side, you know, the better chance that you have of winning. But that does take time, in essence. But what happens is the timetable is diminished greatly, because we expect to see Kyler Murray on the field yesterday. We expect to see Daniel Jones on the field. You're supposed to beat out Eli Manning for this year, right? That's what happens when you get guys in the first round that you're committed to. But not everyone does the same Steve McNair kind of thing and say, hey, look, Jeff said, look, I'm not going to throw him in there. We're going to help him develop the nuances of this game, of this sport at this level, and we'll bring him along at a pace that we feel is applicable for him. And that's why we go out and get good veterans like Chris Chandler to kind of do some of the things that we would expect him to do, Steve McNair, in the next, you know, couple of few years. So I think that there's some value in veterans that come in knowing that they're, you know, there for a reason. They're the Ryan Fitzpatricks, if you will, of the position. And they're just keeping things, you know, in lock and step while the young guys are developing. That's usually the case.
Man, you have to tell us a quick story. I know a lot of people here don't know the stories, but you know, the Oiler days, but we were there with Buddy Ryan and I was on the defensive side. So I had this different view of what was really going on. And it was really crazy anyway, just as a rookie, just seeing all this stuff going on. And what he would say to players and everybody else.
Coaches, players, people.
So I just wanted to hear, like, your view of Buddy Ryan on the other side of the ball. But when he would just yank us from the practices, say, defense, go in, we dominated. How would you guys view all of that craziness that was going on there? Let alone I was just frightened out of my mind. I was just like, oh, well, he said leave. What am I supposed to do? The head coach said stay. What do I do? What do I do?
We knew, Blaine, that this was bigger than us.
Yeah.
We knew that the dissension amongst the staff was way bigger than us. When Buddy was pulling his players off the field, it's because he didn't want to give us that extra period that was agreed to, you know, in the script, right? Because we weren't scripted practices. And if Buddy didn't feel that that period was something that he was going to take advantage of, boom, he pulled his guys off. And that wasn't conducive of team.
Yeah, it divided us.
But the thing, the only thing that kept that model in place was what, Blaine? Us winning 11 straight games.
I can't believe
had we been losing, they would have changed the model, right? But because we were kicking people's butt every single day, that we went out there and fighting each other in practice during the week. Yeah. Say, hey, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, it was broken, but it was working for whatever reason. So, you know, I just looked at that whole situation as just there was no hierarchy. Right. We didn't have a head coach.
Right.
Jack, you know, Pardee. I love Jack Pardee, but great Jack guy. Was more of a quality control, if anything else. And you had these two mega personalities. Kevin Gilbride wasn't near the personality that he was until he got to New York and won a couple Super Bowls. But still, he had a mindset that people respected. Buddy Ryan, they were talking about Buddy Ball is now coming to Houston. And everyone's excited about it, right? Well, then what he brought with him was that dysfunction. He brought with him the turmoil. You know what I'm saying? That's what he liked chaos, you know? And he didn't care. Matter of fact, as an offensive player, matter of fact, as a player, period, you were just a number and an a-hole. That's what you were.
I got to ask you this real quick. 99 team versus 2000 team, Titans, who wins each other? Because I always say the 2000 team was better than the Super Bowl team that went to Super Bowl.
I think you're right. But because the 99 team, we didn't recognize our identity yet. We didn't know we were that good. We were just like, oh, my gosh, we're beating people. You know what I mean? But then that next year, we're like, we set our jaws. We're about to do this. We're about to do the dang thing.
Brad, great to see you, man. Thank you.
No anytime.
All right, from SiriusXM, of course, Titans great Brad Hopkins. By the way, our house divided license plates poll, 79% said not cool. So there you go.
Oh, man.
And Grant Williams staying in the NBA draft. I'll have more on that throughout the day right here on 104.5 The Zone. Have a great weekend. The Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery.
Dang it, Mark.
Bye, Felicia.